streaming video, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, and others. So what happens when Apple and Disney really get into the game in 2019? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with a streaming video expert, analyst, and author about the streaming vid industry. And that conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. This week, the competitive streaming video on demand, the SVOD market, and how it's about to get even rougher in those waters. In 2019, Disney intends to launch its standalone video app called Disney Plus. The launch coincides with the expiration of Disney's content streaming on Netflix. Back in the day, Netflix, as the market disruptor, needed movies. Disney, who wasn't quite ready to get into the SVOD space, signed over distribution rights to its content vault while it found its SVOD strategy. Apple is also expected to get into the video content game in 2019. Amazon Prime Video is looking to expand its stable of original content as its overall Prime strategy continues to expand into Whole Foods and its own physical stores. And there's Hulu, who recently promoted a $1 a month offer to help increase its market share as it increases its own original content beyond The Handmaid's Tale.
The best way to do that is to bring people in through content, but there's only a limited supply of human beings, and then the question becomes how many different subscription services are they willing to pay for as they soon start approaching the amount that they're already paying for pay TV subscription.
That's a lot of big businesses descending on one single market. To help unpack just how this could play out is an expert, analyst, and author. That's now, so here we go.
Peter Chatti, chairman of Creative Media.
Peter, thank you for your time this morning, and you have a new book coming out soon. Let's get the plug in up here.
Excellent. Yeah, my new book is called Fearless Media. And what it is, it's a call to action and what I call an insider's guide to the new media 2.0 world, which is our tech-driven, transformed media and entertainment world.
All right, cool. I have a take on this, and I'd like to get your take on my take. I think that we are probably about to leave the golden age of over-the-top and digital options for entertainment and get into close to a consolidation kind of phase, maybe in the next couple of years, getting back towards that cable bundle kind of situation. Right now, though, I think that everything is just great. I mean, so much great content and everything, but I wonder how long the business models can sustain such a scattered market. What's your take?
Well, I agree with you. The business models for the pure plays like Netflix are fundamentally challenged. Whereas for others like Apple, when it gets into the game of SVOD, subscription video on demand, it's just a fundamentally different underlying business model. Same with Amazon, and I'll explain why. For Netflix, it's all about just monetizing the content itself, so it's all about subscriptions. And Netflix spent an incredibly whopping $13 billion on content in the past year. So how long can it sustain that against the competitors like Apple or Amazon, which they don't need to monetize the content itself? What they can do is they can be used as marketing to drive people in to, for Apple, its stores, to buy Macs, to buy iPhones and iPads. And that's a fundamental business model. So as long as the marketing purpose is served and they drive more sales, it succeeds. It doesn't have to make a dollar on the service itself.
Interesting. There's so much there to unpack. I'm going to land on, as you and I talk this morning, the headline is that Apple has signed a multi-year deal with A24, the production house that created Moonlight and others. Let's jump off of that headline. What does that deal say about Apple's intent?
Well, A24 is known for real high-quality movies, and it's established a formula where it's hit after hit after hit. Kind of like Jason Blum on the horror movie side, where he's got the track record, which is quite unbelievable when it comes to the movie business, to create hit after hit. So there's a formula there, and it's a high-quality formula, and high quality is something that Apple has always proven in our minds.
Yeah, those brands are definitely in alignment, right?
Yeah.
And then earlier this year, Apple signed with Reese Witherspoon's company, among others, spending about $1 billion. What's the budget so far with this? I know the terms of the A24 deal aren't out, but we can ballpark it, I guess.
Well, Apple reportedly spent $1 billion on its own originals last year, and that was in 2017. Haven't seen any numbers yet for 2018, but you can imagine they're going to be substantially more than they were because everybody's numbers are escalating in these all-out, what I call these all-out SVOD wars, where it's a land grab time, and the best way to win and stand out is through offering originals, your own exclusively offered originals that draw people in and keep them there.
Let me ask you a follow-up to the land grab. Give me another take on what that means.
Well, the land grab is that, you have Netflix, who's been out in front, obviously, has 137 million paid subs. It's far ahead of everybody globally, but because content is increasingly strategic for all these different players, like, as I mentioned, Apple, Amazon, AT&T, to fuel their underlying business models, which are very different than Netflix, the best way to do that is to bring people in through content. But there's only a limited supply of human beings, and then the question becomes how many different subscription services are they willing to pay for as they soon start approaching the amount that they're already paying for pay TV subscriptions.
Exactly.
The land grab is to get in there now to somehow pull out some market share and then keep it.
I'm not looking for confirmation bias, but I've said recently on the air and on the record that subscription fatigue, I believe, is starting to creep into the consumer market. Am I overstating that?
I think that I wouldn't call it fatigue as much as there is a limit to how much people are going to pay. And I think the latest statistic I saw was something like 17% of those who pay for a subscription video service in the U.S. pay for three or more of them, only 17% of them. So there's definitely a limit at which people will start being willing to pay a monthly fee, because the reason why they're going into this brave new world of SVOD is to get away from the pay TV packages pricing in the first place. So yes, fatigue, limits. I do agree with you with the general point.
SVOD, by the way, streaming video on demand for the noobs. I cut cord after I quit NBC because I got my first monthly cable bill, and because I got it for free, right, because I was working for Comcast NBC. And I got my first real bill, and I couldn't believe it. And I cut the cord immediately. That was 5.5 years ago. I am one of the 17% with at least three subscriptions. I have a 9-year-old at home, so that helps. I don't know where to start, because Hulu is starting to get a little bit better with original content. You have Amazon, Netflix, everybody. It seems like, what's going to be the new normal?
Well, let's talk about your 9-year-old for a second.
Okay.
Because let's not forget that, first of all, Hulu is now majority owned by Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Disney beat back Comcast to win in that game. So Hulu's going to be a much more powerful player because it has Disney's deep pockets. But let's get back to your 9-year-old. Disney now will be launching its own subscription video on demand service in 2019.
Right.
That's
right around
absolutely clear.
That's right around the time when the contract with Netflix expires, right?
Exactly. And Disney now will withhold its keys to the castle. It's crown jewels like the Marvel Universe, Star Wars, Pixar, Disney princesses that your 9-year-old loves.
Yeah.
And so Disney's going to be using that to draw people in and be an immediate competitor in force, just like Apple will be an immediate and competitor force when it launches. So what I see in 2019 is that I think there will be a realization that Netflix is not invincible, because you have all these other players who are coming into the game, and Netflix is not going away anytime soon, that's for sure. But now it will be challenged like never before.
These are fun strategy stories to talk about because, you know, Netflix is launching in theaters as well to help it keep its cred with the actors.
Right.
But you mentioned Apple. Let's go to Apple there first, because it's the rumor that Apple's content will be made available on Apple devices. And right at the top of the interview, you said something about driving sales of Macs. And I had not thought about that as an option. Is that what Apple is trying to do with this? Because I know that their strategy is moving away from being the iPhone company into a services company.
So the answer is yes. Fundamentally, okay. Apple will always be a consumer electronics company, but it's a content-driven consumer electronics company. So in a sense, it is a media company, but it does use the content to draw us into Apple stores to buy all these different devices. And the fact that it's going to be able to seamlessly integrate across, I think the number that I saw is like 1.3 billion devices that we already have,
right,
will make it an instant force. And with that kind of marquee positioning, you can imagine what that's going to do with the other services that otherwise were, you know, featured on, through iTunes and others. So again, there's another challenge. Apple's seamless integration and giving that unique power to be able to marquee its own service is something that Netflix and the others have never faced before.
Apple's an amazing branding story because the hardware is expensive. It's got a great profit margin, higher than most other companies' hardware. And Apple TV was famously Steve Jobs' quote-unquote toy, side project. Didn't really care for it, right? It seems like a screen, a large screen that came from Apple would kind of be in its swing zone. Is that maybe in play?
Well, this is something I predicted many years ago. I always thought that Apple would get into what I called like the iTV game, which would have a seamless integration with just like, you know, iTunes and iPod, much smaller screen, of course, that integrates it all. I haven't heard much talk about actually the big screen itself that's going to go on your living room wall. Mm-hmm. But certainly the service and the seamless integration approach is something that Apple can uniquely do across all the screens. And because we're in a multi-platform world where mobile is now the most dominant force, you know, we're always looking down. It's with you 24/7. That kind of play may have driven it away from the, you know, the original thought of being more of the, you know, a large Samsung with an integrated player or service on your living room wall. I did see that Morgan Stanley already, just for 2019, projects $500 million in revenues from Apple's SVOD, even before it launches. And then the numbers I saw from Morgan Stanley were they were projecting $4.4 billion via the subscription video on demand service by 2025. And that was only 50 million paying subs. If that's based on 50 million paying sub, that number is ultimately very conservative in my view, because Netflix is at 137 million right now. I think Apple will far surpass that. And so ultimately, those numbers just on the service itself, think about how many hardware sales that will drive.
Right. Yeah, you're right. That's a lot of units for sure. The fight right now seems to be the operating system for our home entertainment, right? You have Amazon. I was talking to David Pogue about this yesterday. Voice through Amazon. I have Google at home. Apple has a voice at home, too. Apple, of course, is the more expensive but beautiful and sounds better kind of thing. Does this content drive one particular vertical over another? Or is music the key player here? Or is SVOD the key player here when it comes to getting us to adopt one brand or another?
Yeah, well, I would say it's the ecosystem itself. It's the content that's driving us in and engaging with us continuously. So music engages with us probably more continuously than any form of media in that sense, because we're all streaming 24/7. If you are the service that has an underlying business model that's not necessarily based on the service, just think like an Apple. We may use our hardware, you know, quite a bit throughout the course of the day. But now if you're listening to the service, you're going to be using it more. That's the reason why all these different businesses are using the service. So I would say that music isn't necessarily more important in terms of driving hardware sales, but it is a form of engagement that is more continuous than more video engagement, although video engagement is significant in terms of hours of growth, too.
Man, you've been indulging me. I appreciate this. It's been kind of a nerd thing for me to follow this market. I'm so happy to have you. Your new book coming up is Fearless Media. You have a Fearless Five list. Do you want to tease that out? Let's talk about that a little bit, because that'll probably give me a good platform and grounding.
Yeah, absolutely. So Fearless Media, as I said at the beginning, it's all about this brave new tech-driven world of media and entertainment. Fundamental thesis, which is not mind-blowing, I don't think, is that as a player in the space, whether you're a traditional media player or a new media player, you have to be willing to be audacious and bold and get yourself out there, take action, experiment. Because if you don't, and you put your head in the sand and hope the forces just move on, then you become a cautionary tale like the Blockbusters of the world. So that's what Fearless is. And my top five Fearless list for 2018, what that means then is it's what I consider to be the companies that made the boldest and most audacious bets of the year. Now, that doesn't mean that they necessarily will win with those bets, but it means that they created new rules of the game. So I can start, if you want, with number one or number five.
Let's go with number five. I like to go backwards.
Okay. So number five is Quibi. Quibi is Jeffrey Katzenberg's new mobile-first subscription video on demand service that really hopes to be the first Netflix for the mobile phone. And what he means by that, because there have been other subscription video on demand services for the mobile phone, but nobody has done it with Hollywood production values, Hollywood budget. So these are going to be big budget ticket items, and that costs a lot of money. So what's audacious about Jeffrey Katzenberg is he's trying to shake up the game and be the first one that really is a mobile first, because Netflix and the others don't focus on mobile first. And he raised $1 billion to be able to do that.
But Peter, isn't that a bit of a cautionary tale with Katzenberg? My wife is an alumni of DreamWorks Animation. He was first into the 3D space, too. And I'm not sure that entirely paid off for them.
Well, again, My Fearless Five doesn't mean they're necessarily going to win. And there are certainly a lot of people who are scratching their head about Katzenberg's move, because others like Verizon failed with Go 90 and Comcast failed with their mobile first SVOD called Watch. But those were different in the sense that they weren't driven by Hollywood style production. So that's what he's betting on. And they themselves over at Quibi, they're the ones who they concede that they don't know if they're going to win, or they don't know if this business model is going to play out. But not many can be like Katzenberg and raise that kind of capital to be able to do it.
That's a fair point.
They're one of my Fearless Five.
Fearless does not necessarily mean profitable. I get your point.
Yes. Another one. So again, going from the bottom, is probably a surprising one for people who are listening, Madison Square Garden Group. And Madison Square Garden Group, obviously they have the Rangers and the Knicks among Madison Square Garden. But what they're doing is they have now announced that they're going to be trying to reinvent the world of live event venues with something called the MSG Sphere. And the Sphere is about as bold and audacious as you get. It's a large 360-degree dome that seats 15,000 to 20,000 people, will first be in Vegas and then London, and it's covered from top to bottom, both on the exterior and the interior, with LED lighting, the highest resolution possible. So each of these will cost $350 million, and by reinventing, what they look to do is create a truly immersive live event experience. That's pretty audacious to me.
Oh, yeah, that sounds quite audacious. I was not aware of it, actually. I'm going to do some digging around on Google after this. What do you got at number three?
Okay, so at number three, not surprisingly, I have Netflix. And Netflix, as I mentioned before, has a pure play business model that I believe is fundamentally challenged, especially as it gets increasing competition. But Netflix continues to try to prove me and some other bears wrong by continuing to build its subscriber count, but also spending insane amounts of money on content to be able to continue to draw us in and keep us there. So its big wow moment is best defined by the $13 billion that it spends on original programming.
That's amazing. That's just so much money. And I don't know what the ROI, I mean, anyway, like you said, Fearless is not profitable, Jason. Back it down. All right. Peter, what's your number two?
Okay, number two, Amazon. Amazon, to me, is the most audacious, truly multi-platform company in the world. It certainly, it's fundamentally driven by commerce and increasingly out-of-home commerce, and that's what I feel is really interesting. But it uses content, like we've been talking about, to draw people in. It spends $5 billion on its original programming. And what it's done, or what I believe has made it the most audacious, or what number two audacious, boldest company in the media tech world for 2018, is the fact that it has made these massive multi-platform bets. So not only online with commerce, but offline with its stores.
Right.
It now releases its original features in movie theaters around the world, which, by the way, a year ago, Netflix said, why are they doing that? And now, as you mentioned, Netflix is emulating that.
Yeah.
But audaciously, of course, they bought Whole Foods, or operating Whole Foods, and now the rumors are, from the industry, they will be setting up to 3,000 retail stores that are out there. And you can bet they're going to be using content to drive people into those stores and then back again online.
Yeah, and I think a quick corollary, you mentioned the Whole Foods, and I wonder if this will play out with the 3,000 stores you just mentioned. But market cap for other competitors in the grocery space fell $16 billion, which is almost exactly what Amazon paid for Whole Foods. So they basically, it was a wash when it comes to competition in the market space. So if there are 3,000 venues that you're talking about kind of do the same thing against competitors, well, Amazon's paying for itself as it continues to grow. That's a kind of an amazing story in a lot of ways. The one thing about Amazon Prime I want to ask you is, it seems like they have a lot of partnerships and subscription opt-in availabilities. Does that keep them more viable?
Well, look, I think that Amazon, the answer is yes. It keeps growing the Prime memberships, which is ultimately what Amazon's fundamental business model is all about. And so any way that it can drive, and that's the reason why Whole Foods, it drives Prime memberships that way, because if you're a Prime member, then you get discounts at Whole Foods and across all of its different ways of touching us. That's what Amazon's doing. Amazon's everywhere. The more everywhere it is, the better it is for Amazon and its Prime business strategy.
Absolutely. All right. What's number one on your list? We're counting them down.
Okay. Number one might surprise you too, because it's much smaller and perhaps even non-existent from the time we're having this conversation. It's MoviePass.
Oh.
And the reason why I say MoviePass is because, first of all, Helios and Matheson, the analytics firm that bought MoviePass, which is the movie theater subscription service at one low $9.99 per month price to get unlimited viewing in movie theaters, so outside of the home movie theaters on a monthly basis. Helios and Matheson bought that company, bet the company on it, has had the most turbulent year that anyone can imagine, crashed and burned throughout the year. Their service actually crashed, but managed to actually sign up about 2 million subscribers who are still with us today, as far as I know, because if you open up the papers or you listen to the radio or anything like that, you may hear a different story from each one each day. So the reason why I said that it's the number one most audacious company is the fact that it bet the company, yes, but it's more than that. MoviePass, whether it stays, the new business that it created, the new business model for movie theater viewing, will not be going away anytime soon.
Right.
Now, I think movie theater subscription services are here to stay. It seems like a natural to me. The business is going to need to evolve again. They can't wish it away. And ultimately, whether it's them or another service, I also think that Amazon, getting back to Amazon, Amazon will, here's a prediction, offer one of its own movie theater subscription services in the next 12 to 18 months as another benefit of being part of Prime. So movie theater subscriptions are here to stay.
Wouldn't theater companies want to get in that business too, like AMC?
You would think that they would once they understand what the full business model is. First of all, they get paid by MoviePass for every person, for every ticket that's sold, even though it doesn't pencil out for MoviePass. And then the more they get us into the theater, of course, the more concessions they're going to spend and all of that. So the answer is should be yes, but MoviePass is really, I think part of it, because of the way that it went about it, has really been a significant irritation to the overall business.
Right on.
And then ultimately, again, it hasn't figured out how to actually pencil out with its business model.
That's a great list. I just have to say, I really appreciate your analysis of that.
Thank you.
I want to pull back. I'm going to ask one final macro kind of question. I'd like to limit it to Apple, Netflix, and Amazon. Here it is. Who has the most and most beneficial data on existing customers that moving forward? I understand Netflix has tons of data, but I'm not sure that it converts. You have an install base with Apple that is so massive, as you mentioned earlier. Once it does open the gates a little bit, it's going to just be a flood. Who is managing their data the best right now?
I think of all of those behemoths out there, most intriguing to me is Amazon, and here's the reason why. Amazon not only knows what we watch and how we engage with content, it also has all the buying information and data that
right.
for everything we search, what we're looking for, our hopes and dreams in buying, and everything we spend for. And ultimately, whoever has the power of the purse is going to be the one that has the most power in terms of being able to utilize data to its own end.
Okay. That makes a ton of sense. I'm going to head fake you and give you one more question. We didn't talk about YouTube yet. What do you see there? I mean, YouTube seems to have almost cannibalized itself. It has YouTube Red, YouTube Music, and now YouTube TV and blanket YouTube. What's happening with Google's play in this?
Certainly spending its own money on it, but obviously Google has such deep pockets, it can. The fundamental problem that YouTube has is its brand. And so because we have grown up, and a generation has grown up just known as being able to watch everything for free, and that's how you engage with that brand, converting us into paid subscribers, even if it's a very different offering, is challenging. Because for the kids, that's not the way that they've engaged with it. And for those of us who are older, similar sort of thing, and we've never paid for it either. And so as we're looking at different services, it makes less sense to us from a visceral level. But ultimately for Google and YouTube, my personal feeling is that they're not necessarily believing that they can make massive amounts of money and profit from the service itself. Like some of the other behemoths, they're using those kind of, its new subscription services to draw us in or draw more in and keep us there, and advertising so that we come in and just continuously use their free services, don't leave the fold, and they monetize us their traditional way. So I don't see YouTube becoming a massive paid subscriber, paid subscription type service when there are other alternatives out there, but it may ultimately not make that much of a difference to YouTube.
This is a fascinating space, fascinating industry. I can't wait to read your book that's coming out in January. This has been one of my favorite half hours I've had this week. Thank you so much, Peter.
No, I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
That was Peter Chotty, founder and chairman of Creative Media. We have all of his contact links and a link to his new book at kgoradio.com. Look for the article that goes with this week's show. Peter's new title is Fearless Media, an insider's guide to today's new media world and where it's going. For podcast listeners, those links are in the show notes. So please clickety that subscribe button while you're over there, too, if you could. I'm on Twitter, by the way, at KGOJason, and the show page is facebook.com/techonomicsradio.